Detta är fortsättning på intervju med Gustav Andersson i Games i New York, kassett nummer 2, sida nummer 1. Och det är idag den 18 juli 1985. Så nu då har du kommit till Jämstan.
Ja.
Och vad gjorde du då det första?
Jag jobbade i en möbelfabrik.
Och vems fabrik var det?
Ja, den är nedslagen i. Det hette Table Company.
Table. Och de gjorde alltså bord och...
De gjorde bord och de gjorde byråer och mycket sådana här... Ja. Om jag kan tala för mig kan jag... Ja, de gjorde rätt fina möbler. De gjorde sådana här stora byråer, sådana här... Som gick tillbaka till 1700-1800-talet. Ja, reproduction förstås.
Vad för slags trä använder de sig utav?
Det är mahogny mycket.
Jaha. Och den fabriken var nere i downtown?
Den är nere i ån. Med hamnen där.
Så hur bodde du då det första? I boarding house eller?
Ja, i boarding house, ja.
Och då åt du på restaurangen i?
Nej, jag åt i boardinghuset.
Jaså?
Man var ju alltid sin lunch med sig.
Jaha, då gjorde jag det åt dig?
Ja. De svenskarna, de unga som kom, de hade portföljer.
Hade
du en portfölj? Ja, barnmaten som det gjorde i Sverige också.
Hade du också med en portfölj?
Nej, jag hade aldrig det. Jag hade en sån här järnbox, du vet en...
Lunchbox?
Ja.
Du skildrar dig från mängden då?
Ja, men så jag blev ju van där uppe i Neville. Det var ju bara amerikaner för mer än så att säga.
Alltså det var inte många svenskar som arbetade i den fabriken?
Ja, det var svenskar där, men det var inte många som jobbade. Det var det andra och tredje generationen.
Så det var inte svensk ledning då för fabriken, utan det var amerikaner?
Ja, det var amerikansk ledning där. Han som är... Ja, ett par bas var svenskar, annars var det, ja. Sen... 40... Vad säger ni? 41 var det, ja. Så, så brände fabriken där, så... Jag ska stanna kvar och laga upp en massa möbler efter. Men jag har lagt in ansökan för Bell Aircraft. Och pojken föddes och han Jan som ni heter, han nästan dog dagen efter. För han var, vi kallar Brisbert, I don't know, han kom med fötterna först. Och sen fick han blodklad i bröstet. Men det tog 2,5 år för han gick bort nästan. Och då... Så då gick han nästan dog på tisdag morgon, så jag gick till Buffalo. Så jobbade jag där 7,5 månader. Så fick jag jobba med Crescent 2, för då började ju krigen, jag vet du.
Jaha. Så hur var det under depressionen då? Höll du på där i...
Ursäkta?
Depressionen?
Ja.
Du kom 29 november?
Jag kom här i början på juni.
1929?
Ja, till Ashtigill,
Ohio. Men till Jamestown kom du i...
Jag vill säga en här trakt, jag kom 29 på november.
Ja. Så då tog du in på boardinghuset och
ja.
Började fabriksarbetet.
Ja,
hur länge höll du på i den fabriken då?
Jag höll på där 7,5 år.
7,5 år?
Ja, så fick jag jobb här i Jamestown. Så.
Jaha. Så hur var du under depressionen? Var du avlagd emellan eller?
Ja. Men jag var 31 var rätt bra. Han var kling, han var ju en smålänning. Han kom hem och var 17 år och han var en jäkla affärsman, får man säga. Han klarade av det, men det blev att bli avdrag. Om de hade 50 cent i timmen så var det nedlagt till 25 cent i timmen. Och här på T-kommer sa att det var upp till 9-10 cent.
Alltså.
I timmen.
Arbetade ni lika mycket då, en 8-timmarsdag eller 10-timmarsdag?
Ja, det var 10-timmarsdag, 9 timmar, tror jag, 9,5 timme tror jag det var. 4,5 timme för middag. Men det säger, de försökte ju, som Kling sa, det finns ju ett barm i dem. De försökte tjäna lika mycket på hälften betalning som de slet, så det var hemskt. Och de som inte kunde följa med, de blev ju avlagda.
För det fanns alltid arbetare som ville komma in och...
Ja, jag tar det för 5 cent mindre som kom in.
Fackföreningen, det fanns inte på...
Det fanns ingen fackförening i möbelindustrin. Men den började då. Den började på 30-talet då.
Jaha.
Det var vad det kallar för ja, Furniture Union, det säger möbels.
Vem startade den? Var det svenskar bakom det, eller?
Ja, det var nog en svensk som började. Han var maskinist, han började och han blev ju svartlistad för det. Och sedan en som heter Pradman, han, ja, nog lite svensk till honom också. För det var ju blandat så många svenskar här, så det var nästan 50% här svenskt. Och han klarade lite mera senare, för det blev mer organiserat. Den började komma där i FHL och CIO leder in här. Så.
Ja, men han är den första du nämnde, vad hette han, Gustafsson?
Han... Ja... Mam...
Vad?
Det är Emma. What the heck was his name?
Doesn't make that much difference,
does it? No, anyway. And he was... Han var svart på svarta listan och blacklist. Yeah, he worked down to Dahlstrom's and he started a union there, and there was a metal factory, Dahlstrom's, you know.
Så han gick ifrån...
Så han fick lämna er, han gick till Buffalo och jobbade som vi gjorde, men vi åkte fram och tillbaka då, i början. Nej, inte i början. 3.5 månader så bodde jag i Buffalo. Jag kom hem på lördagen. Ibland jobbade jag på lördagen, så jag kom hem på söndagen.
Var han med den här då?
Han var med också. Och de försökte få honom ut också. The Manifact Association here tried to influence them there. De told him, go to heck down there. They don't care for that little town here, you know. So he stayed there. But what the heck, you know. Ja. Yeah.
Men det kanske kommer lite senare.
Ja.
Så... men det var svårt naturligtvis att organisera det, för att det var så god på arbetare.
Ja, det var svårt. Och en förskräcklig hårt... Du säger, många fabriker var ju börjat... Många fabriker var ju ute, svenskarna som hade börjat. Och de hade börjat med ingenting, så det var hårda.
Det var hårda.
Ja, det.
Det gick inte att svälta ut dem precis, utan...
Så det blev ju att det var hårt emot hårt till början sen. Ja. Det var ju många som... Ja... Nu ska jag inte säga, men italienare, de började alltid bråket och sen fick svenskarna hålla ut det, vet du.
Alltså, var de mer organisatörer?
Ja, det var många italienare som jobbade på, de fick ju ta de sämsta jobben egentligen, you know. Det mesta i... In the locking finishing rooms and so forth.
Alltså, de blev infösade där, ja.
Ja, så. Så det var...
Hur var de att arbeta med då, eller?
Ja, det var bra att arbeta när jag såg dem. Men du vet, man kan ju aldrig be sure of them, you know. They stuck together and they, you know, and they...
Alltså, de klickade tillsammans?
Ja, yeah, and they were very... But, you know, they were... There's always been intrigues in Italy, you know, and you know that same as today, you know. Yeah, you felt that, yes. Uh-huh. So, but there was a lot of good guys too. Later years, you know, the younger generation was
better. Men de var väl en minoritet?
De var en minoritet i början, ja.
Så de kunde inte sticka upp?
Ja, de kunde inte. Nu är de ju egentligen det drivande här i stan, och de har ett bra hus och de... I affärer, business, you know. Så, det liknande som vi. Jag vill aldrig mina folk gå till en möbelfabrik som vi... De fick ju New York State stipendium. Så vi sa, om du får den, om du klarar sig så i skolan här i högskolan, så du får stipendium. Men vi fick dem bägge två. Så ska vi hjälpa dem att gå igenom college, you know. Så vi skickar dem till de bästa skolor. Jan gick igenom Syracuse University, and Greg went to Cornell, and that's one of the Ivy schools, you know.
So,
and svenskarna gjorde... Så gjorde ju mesta svenskarna om de har en påbrå. Och det försvann från stan. Vi har förlorat de bästa krafterna här i Jämstan.
Så den generationen som kom efter dig, de sökte sig ifrån Jämstan då?
Ja,
alltså din...
de som har kommit senare från Sverige, rätt många har gjort det bra, bara hade bättre skolning i Sverige.
Mm. Men när du kom nu i november 29, Du var väl en av de sista emigranterna som kom.
Ja, vill säga, jag kom ju i juni som du vet, men jag kom till Jamestown.
Sen när du var här då kom det ingen i Sverige längre.
Ja, det kom några 30 och sista 31, men det var inte många. Och sedan efter kriget i 47 och mellan 47 och 50 så kom det några. Men det stannade inte, jag tror. Lasse Wallin och två av dem från Norrland. Det var, hans far var för Volvo, han var mekanik för Volvo, så det började ju exportera Volvo den. Annars, ja, det var inte många som kom. Ja. Vi hade en hel, vi hade ett nästan svenskt fotbollteam där in 40, in 50.
Jaså?
Men det är tillbaka de flesta.
Och det var svenska spelare?
Så, ja, det var svenska spelare. Två göteborgare. Och så var det en Jim Nelson, han var född här i Jamestown, men during depression, so his parents went back to Stockholm. And he came back, he played in good league there. He had one from Värmland, his uncle just got killed here. And he had tried off at IK in Stockholm, so we had a real good team. But we looked like we were going to be New York. We were practically figure out the New York State champion. We had a good chance. But then in the fall, we lost five of those people, went back. One went out to Washington and so forth.
Vad hade de för arbete? De var inte professionella fotbollsspelare?
Ja, de... En som hade en restaurant här hette Carlson, Oliver Carlson. Det var några släkt med den göteborgarna. Så de var bara här och lärde sig. De hade gått igenom... affärsskola i Göteborg, så de var här och lärde sig och gick tillbaka. Och jag vet inte hur de andra gick med det. Det var endast två av de här Östman-pojkarna, Östman, de kom uppe från Norrland. Och så gick familjen tillbaka till Sverige, han dog och hon gick. Och då, de hade en jänta, hon gifte sig med en här, ja... Han har gjort det väldigt bra. Han kom in med Hugo Lindgren som har James Bond Metal Products. And now he's general foreman there.
Mm-hmm. Så hur, berätta lite grann nu hur det gick till på arbetet när du på möbelfabriken då. Du hade lite kunskap om möbelfabriken.
Ja, för att säga min farfar. Min farfar, han var ju en stor kraftig karl och han... Han kunde göra nästan, han byggde hus och han snickade möbler och han gjorde sitt eget instrument och spelade bra sångrösten.
Så du lärde av honom?
Jag var så när han gjorde, han hade en gammal hemgjord svarvstol förstår du. Och när jag började kunde dra den sig, då talade han om för mig, jag frågade honom han gjorde jul sig, kärvagul och vångsjul. Hur mycket är det runt, sa han. Jag är lite mer än tre gånger i mitten, sa han. Men han hade idéer när jag tog pärmen, making them. Those ideas was in that book, you know, they're nothing new. You know those old time Swedes, that's just like one of the foremen who were a Swedish descent here in Jamestown Lodge. He said, you know the magazine, the Popular Mechanics?
Yeah.
He said, that's nothing new, those Swedes have done that a long time ago.
Ja, det var väl så med den här Crescent Tool. Det var ju
svensk
som
man hette
på.
Det var en som hette Åman, tror han hette Åberg. Som hade tagit med sig en nyckel från Sverige.
Ja.
Och sen, let's see, det var... Ja, då var det Dahlström, Danielsson och Peterson, Carl Peterson, han kom ifrån Småland. Men han var nog bättre, det var ju rätt bra familj för hans farbror jobbade ju med ett Crescent Tool. Well, han gjorde ju inte mycket där, han sprang och flyttade saker, men i alla fall han talade om för mig att Kruger kom och de hade kom och hälsa på dem, så han var nog bättre familj egentligen. Ja, och han var väldigt, för att säga, he told me that he took less pay and the guys worked for him and put it back in the business. Så han var en framstående person, vill säga. Him and Dahlström var probably the two best.
Alltså Petersson menar du då? Var en...
Ja, Petersson, ja. Carl Petersson.
Så hade han pengar tror du när han kom hit?
Ja, han hade nog inte mycket. Det var ingen som hade några pengar.
Men Kröger, att han var bekant med det. Han ville väl att Petersson skulle köpa aktier i tändsticksbolaget, väl?
Ja, oh,
ja. Yeah. Det var inte någon nere i...
Ja, det var en som heter Nelson, skitgubbe han. Han var ju född här, han har lite pengar. Han har satt in $500 i fabriken. Så. Och det var några stycken som hade hjälpt honom till början.
Du nämnde Kröger här nu. Det var ingen här i Jamestown som förlorade pengar på Kröger när han sköt sig.
Det är möjligt, det vet jag inte.
Du känner inte
ja.
Men det var nog antagligen anledningen om han besökte honom här i...
Ja.
Att han vill ha pengar.
Ja.
Eller sälja aktier.
Jag säger, det var ju nära en hälsobrunn där nere i Småland. Jag vet inte var det är någonstans.
Så, på arbetsplatsen nu då, du var lite känd med fabrikens maskiner och sånt. Du kunde göra möbler och...
Ja.
Och hade ni kafferast på förmiddagen?
Nej.
Det gick ifrån frukosten direkt?
Det gick ifrån... Kafferasten... Så jag gick tillbaka och jobbade där i 7,5 månader. Och sista månaden så fick jag en 6-8 personer att sköta om. Jag hade, vad det kallar vindbeams. Det beams, vad det kallar det, den som håller. Och sedan kom vi ner plåten på ytan på beams. Vi satte på 2 gunmans, för att säga, en 30, en 50 maskingun.
Och det var under kriget där?
Det var i början på före kriget.
Före.
Ja, det var när tyskarna gått in i Polen.
Och då började produktionen här.
Och sen då kom England in, då jäklar. Förut så var det så hemskt noga. Det var precis som det skulle vara en klockverk. Så, ja. Men sen började jag släppa lite grann. Och det var konstigt i alla fall. Att det sista jag jobbade på var det Carl Air Cobra, så det skulle vara någonting hemskt fint. Vi hade ju 4 maskiner, 4 machine guns och 1 cannon, 1.5-inch cannon tror jag på propeller.
Och detta var för flygplans?
Flygplan, ja. Och sen läste jag om, så när jag var i Finland 52 till olympiska, så hade jag mött den Anders Ramsey, det var Ramsey-släkten där i Finland i Sverige också. Så jag frågade honom om han var blodblod eller blod. Nej, han var blodblod. Det var en adlig familj. Han var friherrans far. Och han hade flugit. Han talade om för mig att han hade skjutit ner 6 av den där kobran i Finland.
Så
mästaren gick till Ryssland. Så.
De planen,
ja. Ett följde det andra. By an accident I found a book written by a captain, Finnish captain here in the library here. And they had ordered 4,090 planes. And 4,073 was delivered. They went of course to India, you know, suddenly.
And, alltså Ryssland fick de planen då?
Ja, det fick de planen.
Du arbetar på kanonerna och
kulfrut? Jag jobbar på tail section. Du vet, jag ska tala om, det var ju många i alla som försökte komma upp sig, vet du, så från ett kanabas, ja, det var ju, men det var för äckligt att åka, som jag sa, pojken var ju sjuk och Helen var ju här själv och det var ju, så jag var glad. Jag slutade jobbet klockan, jag jobbade andra, började 4:30 och slutade klockan 1 på kvällen, men du vet, det tog jag in inspektion och det var en liten nite som låg i lådan som skulle plockas ut när jag gick. Så jag lämnade klockan 2 och kom här och började jobba klockan 7 på klassen 2. Det kunde jag troligt inte vänta sig. Och det var hårt att komma in till klassen 2.
Var det det?
Ja, väldigt hårt. Jag trodde det var den bästa plats. Det var det inte, men det trodde de att det var, säger jag.
Så du höll på i 7,5 månader på i Buffalo?
Ja, Buffalo, där är jag.
Och så kom du tillbaka då till Jämstad och stannade för gott?
Stannade för gott, ja.
Kände du någon då när du gick till Crash & Tools så att du kunde få jobb där?
Nej, jag kände ingen i Crash & Tools. Ja, det var ju några kamrat som jobbade, men det menas ingenting.
Du kände ingen i ledningen?
Nej, ingen i ledningen.
Men när vi lämnar...
Men du vet, vi vill inte hyra några italienare.
Vill de inte det?
Nej, Carl Peterson vill säga, nu var det ju hans son som hade det. Så prästen, du vet, italienska präster kommer att fråga varför inte jag aldrig hyr några italienare. Eller så sa han till honom att, they steal me blind, you know.
Sa han till
honom
det? Ja. Förekom det då?
Ja, visst.
Ja, men alltså de hade ju...
Det var samma i Buffalo. En bas i det vi kallar för i... Invånare, som var i department, it was big, we were only 2,700 work. They had first world, they was built during the First World War, they had, and there was over 20,000 then. And there's a foreman, he carried lead, that was very expensive then, you know. Uh-huh. And he had it all over his body, finally they got him, you know. Or they, anybody could get anything in their hands, you know, they were... Now I'm going to say, Donna Crescent 2, we made 60, 70 of those airplane flyers who went to the Air Force. One after, faster we got one through, and I jobbed up a final inspection on them. And we were picked all three, I don't know why, but I guess my hands were, you know, kind of handy. So, and I wonder how in the heck can they keep on with all this heavy sinking. You know, the boat was torpedoed. Ballonia, I bet they stole 2/3 of all those flyers.
Att de vågar göra det då? För alltså de var ju lika mycket mån om arbete som en ärlig person.
Ja.
De tog den chansen.
Ja, saken var den att de tänkte att det var, krig var nog inte länge, så det
så. Så blev det slut?
Ja.
Och då sålde de det vid sidan om sen?
Ja, det var en del som blev...
Det
såg tryggt
av.
Sen då efter ja, 46 så blev det ju dåligt. Vi var 57 in our department, you know. But then all those guys who were on the wall came back, you know. Mm-hmm. And funny enough, they worked there just a short time and then they left. It was too hard. That was hard work. Your hammer, so your hands swelled up, and you know, you had to, you know, what I call it, it was Smith Forge, you know, those big hammers come down and flatten out the metal, so, a shape that, you know.
You
know, I didn't work in the hammer shop, but you had to take those flyers and you had to set where they are, you know, if I get a flyer, I can tell you. Hard, they call it hard in the,
Härdningen?
Temper. And so then you had to stand and loose them up like that and you know that.
Varenda tom?
Varenda tom. And then slew them some guy. If they cut to the, you know, sometimes it got soft in here. They had a piano wire, they taste them on. Every time, there was high class and tunes, you know. So, every plier was tasted with a piano wire in here. Uh-huh. And if they left an opening, sometimes you had to throw them out to go back, and sometimes you could peen them. You got so you could hit the end of a little... Uh-huh. That was, and then you had to set the jaws so they lined up. So, and you couldn't see, you know, the helmet getting light like this. And then you had to cut tissue paper. You had to cut everyone with tissue paper. And some sheeted, of course, but... And there was another we had a boss, an Italian, that had come from Red Devils in New Jersey. They made something to pliers. They bought a Crescent Tool bottom. And he went through my whole pile once, and then he told me, he said that, you know, you do good work, and the company will look out. Yes, they don't look out for anybody, I told him. So... And then when it got slack, they wanted to put me in what they call a park grind, and it was acid. You know, dipped everything in acid, of course. And so I thought there was a new fabric started up here. They was going to make airplanes out of wood, you know, and they made a couple, I guess, and they were in the mountains. He wants to happen that I had to work there. The first job I worked was one fella. He wanted to work himself. He was one of those guys, you know, the type who wants to get somewhere, you know. And I run into him one evening. He said, "You should go down to school and learn this airplane." I said, "I can't. I'm working in metal." Like, well, he got me in there, and I worked. There was night school, you know. And of course, I got along because Wood was my either one. I seemed to get along just as good in metal as I did in wood. That didn't make much difference.
What year was that they started to make?
Pardon?
What year was that they started to make a wooden airplane?
Yeah, they made wooden airplane. Yeah.
What year?
Up by the airport is now, you know.
Uh-huh.
There that
been hit.
They were on the creek. Yeah, they were 33, 34. Och så tog jag ett sluta en dag och sa till mig, jag vill gå in i det och göra det skitjobb. Så jag gick upp till där och jag tog inte länge förrän jag började kalla lidmän där. I don't know. I had no bad habits, I guess. You know, if they were same in Buffalo, those who had been metal workers, you know, sheet metal, as we call it, tin. Vad kallar det?
Tinsmith, ja.
Tinsmith på. Vad kallar man på svenska? Tinsmith, är det inte?
Plåtslagare.
Plåtslagare, ja. They had to learn, and you know, there was an alloyed, and you had to be so careful because it was brittle. You see, there wasn't exactly, all was an alloyed, casting was an alloyed. Of course, they were over. So you had to be, and when you drill the hole in that metal, you have to be very careful so the bit didn't pick up and the holes got too big, you know. It was close work, you know. And then we put those brackets, there were two brackets about that wide, and there were two bolts in each bracket, and the end of the wing beam who went to the body of the plane, you see.
No.
And they had to there were some small part probably not too smooth, see. And you had to file the hand file that. And there was a fellow, he was only getting 5 cents an hour. He worked for me, and I even dusted that little stool off. He could file that less than 1,000 of an inch. He put a sign bar on it across there, you know, the instrument. I never seen a guy could use a file like that. Most file.
You mean by hand?
By hand. You see people, that file, if you file and I file, the file goes like that, a little round, outside your real train. But he could. And I don't know, but he had it worked on heavy machinery. He'd done that finishing part, so the things slide and all those things. And he was, I never seen a guy could use
it. He was a craftsman.
He was a craftsman, first I called. I've worked with some of the best, I guess.
Men nu, när vi går tillbaka här med, nu du arbetar i möbelfabriken, du sa du har inga kafferast. Ni hade ni lunch då, vid middagstiden?
Ja, jag ska tala om för. När vi jobbade på klassen 2, vi jobbade 23 på det apartment. Det var att vi made mostly to care the pliers. They made pliers mostly, see.
Ja.
All kinds of them, you know. And they got a new what they call a work manager from Cleveland. And one of our men had just died. He died of a heart. Another fellow and I, you know, here we run, and we used to help that fellow out. He could never keep make, so he worked, so we helped him always a little bit every day, you know. And then finally, he was only in his, he must be around 60. He had a ship along with my dad in Ashtabula back in 1900.
Mm-hmm.
And he died, so one day, you know, the guys had a sandwich, they snuck a sandwich in the drawer, in their benches, and started eating, you know, a few minutes, you know. And there come that work manager, you know, and boy, Eric Erickson, he was like, you know, they were big in their mouths, but, you know, they didn't have the guts, really. I figured, I sat there, he's seen me and he's seen them too, so I was what he used to hide. So he come and talked to me, and the other guys were stretching their neck, and he said, Anderson, he said, would you see if you can get some flowers? That was all I was doing. Because the other ones, they had one older. I was one of the new beginner, you know, there.
Uh-huh.
But he figured I was the one to talk to.
Uh-huh.
You know, sometimes that doesn't pay to run either.
Uh-huh. No, I suppose it doesn't. But during those years and depression years, the people were scared. People were scared to be fired, I suppose.
People were scared, I will tell you.
You couldn't take a bite of a sandwich in between the...
But then... Then on 43, they got the first vacation, paid the case in a half a week. 43?
You never had any vacation before
43? No paid vacation before.
Was there general rule all over again?
General rule outside, probably in some big factories, some big factory or something. But in the smaller factory. Of course, Crescent Tool was the biggest tool factory. It was in the United States then.
No, and they didn't have vacation on the...
No, they didn't have vacation.
They had unions, though.
They had a union, yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
Kassett nummer två, det är sida nummer två. Fortsätter med intervju med Gustav Andersson, James och New York.
Ja. Well, I hope I can... Yeah, so... So jag slutade, the Duramall, they had taken over, there was Fairchild from New York, a big, big company. They had an airplane factory out in Long Island. And they was going to make a radio cabinets here. And they made, actually, this is a part that I bought from them, this here. And they paid, well, you know, paid, well, we could make them piecework, they paid in the hourly rate up there. So, I worked in the experimental for a little while, then they took me in and sent me out on the line there, so, and somehow I had to help to start the lines there, and so finally they gave me the sub-assembly there, and, well, that didn't last too long, I guess, a year and a half, and then they closed up, because it was actually to save tax, you know, they probably didn't make any money. They did make money. We made, in the experimental, we made fins, wings for those atomic bombs. Mm-hmm. We were not supposed to know what it was, and you know. But there was, the basic the construction was wood and then with fiberglass over it. And there was, we were not supposed to, you know. But I found a lot because I was the last one in to have tools there. We made both fiberglass boats, the first fiberglass boat ever made there. And the first fishing rod was made there.
And there was at what was the
car? Duramall up there by the airport.
Here in Jamestown?
Yeah, Jamestown. And they made mahogany veneer, they made molded it. They had their own, you know, there was their own invention. They had a big rubber cloth with electric wires inside. And they used to glue the that it smelled something like the embalming fluid they have and the people, you know. And they molded it, and they wanted me to stay on a little bit longer because I had been sent down, I was sent down to New York because they had so much trouble with repair down at the Majestic Radio shop, and they sent two of our fellows there, and one Italian, he was the finisher, and the other was had very good men. One born here, no, they were both born, one was born in Göteborg and came here as a child, you know, the other one was, I didn't know what Danielson was, but anyway. And of course, the Italian wrote their swindle sheet, you know, we call that, you know, dog documented, you know. And they got too expensive. I told him, I'm coming down. We're coming down. The superintendent never said anything, but I told him what we're here for. Well, they know me, so they took me, you know what I mean, didn't know I wasn't lying or on their back or anything. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, so they... So finally, after a couple of weeks, we made an agreement to pay so much for repair, and guys came back here. And of course, then they closed the shop up here, see. But then we had made big radio cabinets there, and they wanted me to, all those big boys in New York wanted to make liquor, like a small bar or them. So I made over quite a few of them for a small bar. And then nobody could repair those boats, you know, when they come in a couple of boats, I had to repair them. And, And we made 3,000 boats, but they went to south on Mississippi and most of them, a few around here, Jamestown.
So that company was owned by Fairchild?
Fairchild, yeah. Mm-hmm. And the boss in the experimental, he was a good mechanic, and one of the head in the office, they had more than 100, most had 100 in the office, God, it was a big. And of course, the dependent on the government's work, they would pay it for it, you know, but we couldn't compete so far as the radio compared with the South. And him, and he was going to make suitcases out of the same system, you know, molded. But Fairchild sued him for every penny they had, you know, with his patent. See, they had three men in the, they had two electronics. And that's where I learned a little bit of electronics. And they had the three guys in the, three fellas in the experience. They were, was an Englishman there. He'd been captain during the war in the, I know. So they asked me if anybody knows about the metric system. Well, he said, I did. And then he kept that to have been boss of the boats. He thought they were going to sell him with the boats, with the patent of the boats. So he was hanging around there. And they, of course, he took an offer. We were just left alone, you know. So, and then we had to pack all the drawings and all that. They went back to Fairchild and all those, you know, those retorts and those. So I asked this captain, I find, said, "What's that?" We hadn't marked down the names. And I said, "What is this called?" "That's also a flash," he said. Yeah, I learned more there, I suppose, and then, you know, some things you never run into a laboratory, you know.
Oh, and then, so you had some experiences then. How did it work out then from the beginning, if you go back to the early 30s, when you worked together with the... when you worked with the Swedes, you had no problems. In other words, you could talk each other in Swedish, I suppose, then. What happened when you had the Italians with you? Did you eat lunch together?
Well, you could understand, you know.
Oh, but did you talk?
Among themselves, I know the superintendent was son of the owner, Taylor, and you know, at the noon rest there, you could have heard him, blah, 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 you know, they were talking Italian. And they were Albanian, or God knows what it was, Greek, you know, that was...
Did they keep together in one section?
They were in one section. They were mostly up in the finishing room.
And they had their own lunch in their section?
Yeah, their own lunch in...
Did they mix with you?
No, they did not mix. You know, we had our own... See, when I told you that we had that fire there.
No.
The old Swedes and the old... There was a couple of Americans there, too, but good cabinet makers. The fellow who run the elevator, he come up, he throwed one of his things, fires at me, and I went in there and tried to... What happened? At one of the barrels of lacquer, you know what lacquer is, don't you? Yeah. And they were dripping down from the... We were on third floor. No, yeah. Yeah, sure, we were on third floor. And the fourth floor there was the finishing room. And they run down, and most of it had ordinary glue, you know, animal glue pots, you know, and we had it on a hot plate. And they hit the hot plate. And it was just like Niagara Falls, the fire's coming and going up. Like. So I run there and empty that goddamn thing, but I guess I got some, because they said I'd throw the fire extinguishers right in there, and then the sprinkler system, and I got both, so the officer told me, said, "You better go up to the cell when they get a couple of hookers." Don't catch the cold. No. And so, but the old Swedes, you know, they had those big toolboxes, you know, somewhere big square, you know, like in Chista.
No.
And the first thing they did was putting their tools in and drag them over to the elevator and the heck with the fire.
Well, you had your own tools?
Oh, heck yes. I got tools. It's kind of messy. But you want to go down the base?
We take a look at the...
Huh?
Each worker had his own tool in the furniture.
Yes, sir, and he had good tools because he had to make moldings and back in them, a lot of them. Oh. They didn't have the machinery as they have today, you know.
Why did they have that? Was this a precaution, you think, from the leadership? Because if they stole from you, they didn't care then.
Well, you don't have, what I mean, And I'll go back to this fella, Crescent Tool, there right there, and he said, when he came from New Jersey, there they store from each other all the time. Here they don't do it, he said.
No.
Mostly Swedes work for Crescent Tool, you know. Uh-huh. And they were saying there, you never have to worry among the workers. No. Now and then, they probably forgot the tool, you know, but no, they were very honest. They were poor, honest, and they just made a lot of them lost their homes. And
so every night then you had to lock that box up?
You locked your box up, yeah.
Oh. And if something was missing, there was a lot of swearing the next day.
Yeah. I never forgot that. All they thought of was getting their tools and their boxes and all the shop.
So there was the biggest possession they had,
yeah.
I suppose.
See, and that's why, like I told you, the fire was on, fire was on Tuesday. And Wednesday I went down to Bell Aircraft, that happened all at once.
So they was completely shut down then?
See, they had, the firemen, don't you, the Transylvania. They shot big holes in the floors and, you know, all the water from the, you know, it was like Niagara Falls going down, all the machines, they tried to cover them, but, you know, they all rust and they had to go all through everything, you know. It took months before they got back. So they tried to get most of the guys, they were quite busy then, so they tried to hear them off the other factories, see.
Uh-huh.
But they want to keep a few for repair work, like, he said he would give me at least 2 and 3 days work, you know. But yeah.
How about the rest of the cooperation between the workers and the different Albanians? Yeah. Like that? Did you talk to each other?
Oh, yes. Yeah,
discuss politics and stuff like that?
Well, there was much politics because there were days of Roosevelt, you know.
But there was Roosevelt then?
Yeah.
Oh. And were they for him?
They must have been because he won so big, you know. But I know up in Naval there when the assault occurred in 1936, you know. Oh, he was a Republican, and he was the head of our union because he had belonged to the union here. He was the only one who ever knew about the union, so they made him a presidency. And he was a Republican.
He was a Republican?
Yeah. And I told him, I said, well, you kick him. He said, can the insurance company take care of? Why should they have Social Security? I said, well, I told him, I said, that's just in compulsory saving. I said, you only get them as time is decided or years and so forth. Yeah, he said, so I said, what happened to your insurance? Well, he said, I had to take it because to live, he said, because most of the, you know, they had to take from their insurance whatever they could get, you know. So I said, you're in your damn communist guy, I said. You know, the American people are not very bright when it comes to politics, you know.
So he was a Republican and a union boss?
He was the head of the union. That didn't mean much. There was there was not an associate union. There was just an independent union, you know, first workers.
But it sounds strange, though, that...
Pardon?
It sounds a little bit strange, though, to have a Republican as a...
Yeah, they were...
At that time?
In that time, that little town up there was so Republican, so they... When Roosevelt's picture was in the paper, they wouldn't even read the paper.
Is that right?
Yeah, and there was Svenska, also Swedish people, family. And they were born here, but, you know, I'm telling you...
How about the Italians? Were they Republicans?
No, they were not. They were most of them were Democrats. That's just in the later years, those who have made good there, practically every Italian were
Democrat.
And all the Swedes who came here around Jamestown, farmers and everything, were all Republicans. And Carl Sandburg mentioned that many times. And there was, I went through the history of Chautauqua, 1920, and there was only one farmer who was a Democrat. And when I lived in Mabel, I had no chance to go to night school, so I was I passed the exam for my citizenship by two very nice Republicans. They were both members of the Lutheran Church up there. So.
What year did you become a citizen?
1935. Yeah. So I voted for Roosevelt the first time. And course, there was, I forgot who was running against him. There was Taft or somebody that's wrong. And I know Dinald Kling, the son of the owner, he came and thought he felt sorry because he had lost. He didn't know.
What happened to Kling?
Kling, he died, of course, and he had five factories when he died. He had over 700 employees. And he died from, and he was worried. He had a hard time dying because he didn't think his son was qualified to take care of it. Arvid was, he was a big raw bones Swede, that's Kling, and his son were, well, dealing with 4 meter, Arvid was probably 4 meter. 6'7" and being 6'5", big guys, you know. But he was very hard, you know. He hadn't gone through Eklutten as the old man had, you know. So he died too young, and Arvid was sickly, so he left the shop. So they were sold to a firm of course, that was long after my time, you know. From New England, so.
So they had died out in the Klings.
Yeah, so far as the Klings are gone, they're none here. So they still call the Klings furniture shop, but that's all that's left.
So did you get the feeling that they were hard drivers, those Swedish manufacturer owners?
I would say the most of them were. I suppose it was not easy for them either.
No.
They were hard times. Then nobody could sell anything. Kling himself went and spell because he could take a loss, perhaps. He had quite a surplus of running cash, so he could afford it, you know. He was probably the best of a lot of shops went out. You know, there was 42 furniture shops around here in Jameson, and how many is there left? Three. The hoard for them, too. You have to look on both sides, you know. It was not easy, you know.
But the unions now, were they too hard to give in to the management's pressure?
Yeah, well, yes, it was hard, but what I mean, there was a lot of strikes here, and there was hard against hard, because finally Lundin, who is our congressman now, he started at the labor relations, see, and they started sorting out, things worked very nicely. If there's a strike, it's a couple of days, a week or two, maybe, you know. There they could hang on for a long time. So there was a very hard feeling between the you know, yeah. If they know if you work for some place, they won't hire you. If you want to thought you're going to get a better job, they won't hire you.
So you were blackballed in Jameson?
Yeah, what I mean, I was not blackballed, but, you know, the manufacturers association, you know, they stuck together, see, and they claimed that Ford wanted to build a factory here. And the manufacturers association stopped it because then they have to pay higher wages.
Oh, I see.
That's a long, long story, actually, you know. But you had some like Franco Anderson who helped to build the Hotel Jameson there, you know.
Yes.
The Ken Hugo Lindgren. None came in, maybe their clothes on their back. Franco Anderson used to work himself, and he used to go out in the saloons and pick up, you know, before Prohibition, and pick up people, you know, drunk, whatever, so they could work cheap, you know. But his son Paul was much harder to get along with than the old man, and so were his sons. Ari wasn't bad, but Dino, he was hard, and they were worse than their...
And their fathers?
I know. A fellow named Anderson, so he was a nephew to Franco Anderson. He worked for me on a launch company. He told me, no, he said, they move out on the Hunt Road and play golf. They don't do like my uncle did, work and maybe had one girl in the office, you know. You have to give him credit, too.
The old timers, they were human.
They were hard, yeah, the old timers were even more human than their sons were. Wasn't it that funny? Why?
So they have more business now.
More business, yeah.
You know, and they don't, maybe the division is ruthless too, or?
Yeah, it was funny. Well, the trouble is, later years, like in Crescent Tool, When Carl lived, the old man, he knows all the fellas, and he didn't want to talk to him, and his son come in there, not there, but back in. He felt it was a hard feeling. He come walking into the shop, and I said, I think I tried to be polite. I was not, never been a, what do you call it, a suckhole here, but what's the difference? He was the boss, and I said, good morning. And he smiled, and he was happy, and I talked to him after I left there a long time, and he remembered. You see, there was a, but there was a lot because the hired guys, what do you call it, who was like management or labor relations men, and they were hanging on. They started a lot of trouble, those guys too, you know, if they had a chance, but because the job looked important, you know. It's they. And if everything went smooth, he wouldn't have a job. You know, it's hard to, you know, the whole view is so broad or deep, so it's hard to keep track of it. But there was a lot. I had to go on the strike, the first strike I ever went. I left the mail before the strike there. There was a long strike, over 3 months. And I left Crescent too, but just before there was a long strike, it probably lasted 6 months. But during the war there was a lady there, she was something else, you know. She found a box, they had a metal box that the pliers were kept in, you know. And of course the women could never lift them, so the men had to lift them up there, you know. And she found a box that was almost 3-4 ton, and she turned in the whole box. So he said, we're getting 50 cents a hundred for called burr falling. That was a hit all the corners here, four corners, 50 cents a hundred. And they want to cut it down to 15 cents. And I happened to be a committee man for the union that they put it on a sucker like I was. And so they head of the union asked me, said, you guys mad enough to go out? I suppose you have to, so we went out. We're only out less than a week. It was right during the war, you know. So some fat colonel came down from Buffalo, from the ordnance department, and he told me, said, you got a good job and you should stick to it. And he said, you know, it could send you out in the front, you know, and all that crap. Some of the younger fellows, our brothers and our friends are there, and they're not to be shamed on. He said, why aren't you there? He said, you know, them young fellows were not so easy going as, you know. So that settled that, so we were back to work. And 15
cents
a hundred. And they sent experts there from, and they said, honey, hey, can you pick them up to do, even?
But there was no choice.
The 50 cents remained. So the boss was in trouble, and he tried to, you know, how to, and those, the manager and that, so after all, you know, everybody was looking out for their job, then the boss and the labor relations man was looking out for his job, you know, and that woman, she was not liked after that, I tell you. Well, I mean, maybe that doesn't mean anything to you, but there are things that happen. There probably was the same thing in Sweden, you know, absolutely, you know, that's just human nature.
Yeah, there it is. Yeah. But could you strike during the war?
You were not allowed to strike.
Well, there was a law.
Well, yes.
They could cut it on
maybe. Well, I guess they were not supposed to strike, but they walked out anyway.
Well,
there
was during the war.
That's the right during the war, during the war.
But you took a risk, though. I mean,
they took an awful chance.
Could they call you right out to the front?
Yeah, no, I don't know if they could or not, but that's what the guy told us, you know. That.
How old were you then at that time?
Well, let's see. During the war, I was in the early 30s.
Oh, yeah, there was.
Yeah, I was in class 2 because I was married then. But I never got those cards, and most of them guys, when they got a card, they run right to the management, you know. I never turned one in, I said.
So how were you living then? Did you have your own house then?
Yeah, I had bought an old house that I paid it. I bought it in the 30s, yeah. 1940 I had bought it. And I paid it. It was what I call a home. You know, so many houses people owned were lost during the Depression.
Some of your friends lost houses?
Oh, a lot of friends lost houses. People who had worked all their life on to pay for a house, you know, lost it. And then the big insurance company like Aetna, they won. So 1947, after the war, they only had left the only $300 million. In mortgage on the houses. That was the lowest point. That was when people had their best, actually. It was 47. And after that, they thought things were going to be good, and, you know, they just paid down and what they had and bought houses. But that was, so people who had money, there was one here, the Sheldon family, they had bought, I think they owned 360 houses here in Jamestown, because they had took them on mortgage, you know. And that whole house I had, that was lost, I guess, and there was what they call for homeless. It was the government owned them, actually, see. So they paid to, practically to the government so much a month, you know. I think it was $22 a month. So after so many years, and I paid it off in a shorter time, see. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, anybody going through depression, it was bad because a lot of people lost their courage. You know, you don't dare to take those chances you would otherwise, you know. But somehow we got along and we got a good home, got two good family, sons, and so I have no kick coming.
No. So but you rented then during the Depression?
Pardon?
You rented apartment then during the Depression?
I rented the first two apartments, but then when I bought this house, I paid it as a rent, you know. Paid off there. I had to pay $200 down and then was rested.
So you married in 1936?
1938.
Yeah.
In June
1938. Uh-huh. And you had met your girlfriend
In the boat 1936.
So why did you go back to Sweden on 1936? Yeah. Did you have enough money to go back?
I had enough money. My dad wanted me to come back. He wasn't feeling so good. You know. And of course, 1952 was the last time I saw him. He died 2 years after.
So then, 1936, it was unusual for anybody to save up enough money.
1936 was a pretty good year.
It was.
Yeah, because they know the war was going to be on, you know.
Did they know that?
Oh, that was. DuPont had been over in Europe, and you know, he was on the boat coming back, you know. So
you could see it.
There was a feeling, you know, here.
And
the big factors already started, you know, converting. Roosevelt, he lent that land and leased this cruises to England, you know, and after when it started. It actually didn't start before 40 with any great, but I mean, but there was an undercurrent there, you know. And people got little money and they started buying houses and whatever, furniture and so forth. So 1936 was a pretty good year. So and it didn't cost much to go to Sweden then, you $300. So we were, I think I got an old album, if you want to see an old album or...
Oh, we can take a look at it later. Yeah. So you went home then alone?
Yeah.
And you rented a place here and...
Yeah, I was boarding then, you know.
Oh, I see. Well, yeah. Still boarding.
Yeah.
So you didn't have any intention to stay in Sweden?
Well, yes and no. I had a relative, a cousin of my mother. He had been here some years in the... Well, it was must been after the First World War, and they come back, I think, 1922 or 23. To Sweden. He lived in Stockholm. He had to learn the machinist trade here. He said the first week he lasted 2 days, he went in the shop, told me no, and got fired. But after a while he said, you learn the trade. So And he wanted me to go have work for Statens Järnvägar. And he wanted me to go in there. He said, you don't want to go back to hard work in the United States, he said. And, well, I had met Helen. I don't know what happened, but somehow my dad was kind of not very happy because he thought I wouldn't stay in Sweden, you know.
But your brother already had the...
My dad is still running the farm.
He was still running the farm.
Yeah, and my brother, of course, took over later. Mm-hmm. So, and things was not so all very good in Sweden either. It was better. I don't think you remember anything about.
No, I was too young then.
Yeah.
But were you looking around for any work in Trollhättan or?
I didn't. Like I talked to Hjalmar, of course. There he was talking about, but. I figured, you see, that's a funny thing, you're probably a little too proud. I didn't want to start back of anybody, you know. You had to start as a beginner, you know. But I was foolish, because a friend of mine, I had met here in the States. He went back and he went through back my school, and he was in the building.